You are listening to the Hoops Fix podcast, the official voice of the UK's largest basketball website. Visit hoopsfix.com for exclusive news, videos, and more.
Welcome to another episode of the Hoops Fix podcast with me, your host, Sam Nita, full-time British basketball advocate. And on this week's show, we've got none other than the Milton Keynes Breakers, that is Pete Taylor, the chair of the club, and Josh Merrington, the general manager, to talk about what they are building in Milton Keynes. They've been making a lot of noise over the last few years, as we've seen a senior program that's gone from Division 3 to Division 2, and now will be Division 1 next season, having brought back all of the local talent to play for their squad. We've got a community program with over 1,000 kids playing every single week, which is just incredible. And we've got a club that's turning over £500,000 every single year, which again, is not a small amount for a National League club, especially Division 2. And I think not just that, but they've also built a really serious fan base. You know, when you look at the National Cup finals in January, they had over 400, 500 traveling fans to Manchester, which is really unprecedented for a National League club in the time that I've been covering this sport. You just don't see it, especially at Division 2 level. So yeah, I wanted to dissect it and try and understand how they've done what they've done, how they've made it work, and what I guess the lessons are that other clubs can hopefully take to, you know, improve and build upon what they're doing in their own local areas. Before we get into the show, as always, got to mention our Patreon account. If you like what we're doing, if you want to support what we're doing, please go and take 2 seconds to check out patreon.com/hoopsfix. There you can donate as much or as little as you like every single month or every single year to support the work that we're doing. You know, all this stuff does cost time, it costs money, and we are looking to our audience to help support that work. So please go and check it out, patreon.com/hoopsfix. As always, I would love to hear what you think about the show. If you're watching on YouTube, leave a comment below. If you are watching anywhere else or listening anywhere else, you can reach out to me on every single social media platform at HoopsFix. Or if you prefer some one-on-one interaction, you can drop me an email, sam@hoopsfix.com. I reply to every single one. Anyway, that is enough from me. Here is this week's show with Josh Merrington and Pete Taylor. Pete, Josh, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us, Sam.
Yeah, thanks for having us, Sam.
Obviously, this has been a few weeks coming. We've been going back and forth on emails. This was born of a couple of things. Like, one, of course, you had this magical National Cup run. And there's been a lot of questions about how are you doing what you've been doing in Milton Keynes. A lot of clubs obviously trying to replicate it and kind of have the success that you've had. So I thought, let's get into it and go behind the scenes to really pull the curtain back. You've obviously been willing to share this stuff. So I think, initially, let's just start with the history of the club. What were the early seeds? Kind of what happened, and then how has it kind of got to this point? Giving us a brief overview, Pete.
Sure. So my wife and I were living in the States, and we returned back to the UK, we're both retired. And so we were in a situation where we were kind of like not had too much to do. I'm obviously a basketball player. So I got back involved with some community basketball in Milton Keynes with a very small club called Shenley Scorpions. At the time, probably 40 or 50 kids running around in a gym, run by enthusiastic parents who really didn't have any basketball background. As soon as I showed up, they kind of figured that I knew what I was doing and suddenly said to me, would you like to take over the club? We've been doing this for 10 years and we're not really getting anywhere. We've all had enough. So I sat down with my wife and I said, I've always said that if there was an opportunity to kind of run a basketball club, we've all been critical of how clubs are run in the past. And so I said, well, this is the opportunity to do it. But I did warn my wife what would happen. And so there are no surprises where we are right now.
And so where was the club at that point? And when we're talking about timelines, when was this?
So we're talking 2017, back end of 2017. So I think my wife and I took over the club in September. So we're not even 7 years old yet. And had about 40 kids. But the philosophy was very simple. The reason I got involved in it was because returning from the States, a couple of things struck me about basketball. One was I couldn't get over the explosion in the junior National League. But I also couldn't get over the fact that some of the scores were ridiculous. And I also couldn't get over the fact that local basketball seemed to have all but disappeared. I grew up in Luton, where we had something like 20 teams at one stage. There is now one team in Luton. I think that's fairly sad, and I'm sure it's replicated across the country in various places. So when we had the opportunity in Milton Keynes, I just said, this was going to be about getting kids back playing basketball. It's going to be a bottom-up philosophy. It's not going to be a top-down philosophy. And I think that's the thing that's probably set us apart.
And then what was the initial plan? Like, did you sit down and put together a business plan and say, okay, this is where we want to be in 5 years, this is where we want to be in 10 years, this is how we're going to start? Like, kind of what was the starting point?
Yeah, yes. And the honest answer is that what you see today is pretty much what we envisaged. It's not that different. The timescale's about the timescale I envisage. Certainly not going to take any major credit for the men's situation. It was always the intention that by now we would have a men's team. But the reality of the men's team was that what I wanted was somewhere, once the kids reached 18 and the ones that didn't go to university, because we're not a university town, that they had somewhere to play. So in my mind, that was actually a Division III team. And obviously that's where we started. But what we've done is we've continued to grow our community base. And I think then when you look at our numbers today, we have almost 1,100 kids, boys and girls from 4 years old, playing in about six regional centres. We run our own CBL, our own Central Basketball League. Part of that was recognising the challenge of travel for kids. And so we have a situation where about 300 of our kids play in our CBL and never have to leave Milton Keynes. And then we've kind of gone on from there, really.
One of the things that obviously when we talk about timelines, obviously 2017 was pre-COVID. One of the things that clearly happened in the middle of that was COVID. And then we obviously had a shutdown. Where were you sort of pre-COVID? What happened during COVID? And then obviously coming out of it, I'm assuming that's around the time when Josh joined as well. So we'll kind of carry on after that.
Yeah, so up to that point, I was doing all the coaching myself every Saturday afternoon. I was doing 6 hours and coming home absolutely exhausted. But we'd grown. We'd opened a couple of new venues. We were up to about 300, between 300 and 400 kids, and then along came COVID. Ironically, COVID was quite good for us for a number of reasons. One is it gave me Josh. Josh was working in Portugal at the time. And had to come home. And I'm not sure if everybody's aware, but Josh is a Milton Keynes boy. Josh went to school. So my younger son and Josh were both at the same school. And I followed Josh's career for a couple of years because I knew when we put the program together, my wife and I realized that at the point we were going to go into the Junior National League, which was going to be about year three or four, that we needed a general manager. I needed somebody that was going to run that whole basketball day-to-day program. And that wasn't going to be me. If we were going to make this something successful with longevity and scale, then it was going to need a slightly different structure. So a couple of things, really. One is as soon as COVID was over, we hit the ground running. I think we had 1,500 kids, an outdoor camp within a couple of weeks of being allowed back in. Josh was already on board and planning things. And then something else that happened, which we should give we don't give our government a lot of credit, but we're given something. And that was for the apprenticeship program. Kickstart, correct, Josh?
Yeah, Kickstart, yeah.
Yeah, the government came out with a program called Kickstart. And that actually allowed us to employ, I think we employed four full-time coaches. And the government actually paid for them for the first 6 months. So I have to say that was actually a big, big bonus for us. Not again, just circumstance.
And then before we just get to that, like, I don't want to skip over that, you know, we started with 40 kids and then a couple of years later, we're at 400. Like, there is a process there, you know. Even this weekend, I was at a game and I was speaking to a guy that runs a club in West London. And he was just like, I just can't get this beyond myself. It's like, I'm sort of here and I'm trying to work out how to get to the next step. Like, when you talk about sort of growing, like the actual process of, okay, you can start a session, you can book a hall, you can get, you know, 10 kids into that session. Well, then how do you then book another hall and then get another session going and then find another coach? And then, like, how do you actually begin that process of going beyond yourself?
Sure. And that is, you know, without a doubt, a challenge. So let's be fair. First of all, we have a couple of advantages in Milton Keynes. When my wife and I moved to Milton Keynes in 1982, our population was 180,000 people. Today, our population is north of about 300, 320,000. Milton Keynes will top out at 400,000, 400,000 plus. So we've got a very young city with lots of people moving in. So ironically, I kind of always knew that finding kids was not going to be the problem. The problem is, where do you put them and who coaches them? And so I made a commitment, my wife and I made a commitment day one, that we would provide the best coaches we possibly could. And that was always in the back of my mind, that we would do that. But as we grew, there was a, without a doubt, there was a pent up demand. We went out, we advertised, and we got word of mouth. We started doing some after school clubs, the usual thing. But I think, again, we never said no to a kid. Yeah, there were times when I was packing the kids in the early days, and but I felt as if, you know, our mission statement was to offer basketball to as many boys and girls in Milton Keynes as possible, and I wasn't going to say no to kids when they wanted to come calling. So we were soon absolutely full in our first venue, and then actually I went down to Bletchley Leisure Centre, which has two courts down there, and with the support of the Milton Keynes Community Foundation, they gave us some money to actually open that venue. And so I literally started a two-court venue with nobody. But by the end of that season, we were actually full down there as well, and then moving on to another venue.
That process of advertising to make people aware of what you were doing, that is like, what was that? Was that going to schools and saying, can you give out these flyers? Was it running free taster sessions? Was it running Facebook ads? Like, what was the process of actually making people aware of what you were doing?
Yeah, I'm not techie savvy. So mine was basic stuff. It was going into schools. It was doing after school clubs. It was offering free lessons. I think we hit it at the right time. When I look back there, we were I brought in a couple of coaches. I managed to get into a couple of schools. I think the numbers here, the pent up demand, was just immense. And I'm not sure I can give you a definitive answer how we managed to get to that point so quickly. But I do think one of the things that we had some advantages. One was the number of kids that are available in Milton Keynes. The other thing was that my wife and I had the time to put into the club. And this is something I think an awful lot of clubs do not have. They don't have the luxury of being able to kind of go into this full time. And also the luxury of not needing to make a living out of it. Obviously, I ran some businesses for a number of years. Not a wealthy guy, but I had enough money that money wasn't the prime driver for this. So whatever money we made, we basically reinvested every single penny back into promoting the club again.
Gotcha. And then, Josh, when you were brought in, like, how were you approaching your role when you looked at kind of what the club was doing, the raw numbers, and kind of where you saw yourself fitting in and being able to help things? Kind of how did you approach it?
It was kind of something that I was always wanted to do. Being in places like Newcastle, where they have obviously a huge community program, when I was coaching there, and just seeing what they have, I always thought that there was great potential in Milton Keynes. And the fact that Pete had done all the hard work at the beginning and got the ball rolling kind of made it even more enticing that, you know, it was almost coming out of COVID, a bit of a blank canvas to kind of build the club how we wanted to, from the bottom up. Another thing about Milton Keynes is there's not really any competition. You see a lot of clubs, you know, two or three clubs in the same city all fighting over players, coaches, venues. We kind of don't have any of that politics, if you want to call it that, in Milton Keynes. So we were just able just to kind of crack on, develop the club from the ground up, and try and get as many kids playing as possible. Obviously, I think what I was able to do, with Pete's support, was identify some good coaches and bring coaches in. So during COVID, we had like Ricky Broadmoor would do a lot of work with us during COVID. And then we launched the Sixth Form Academy in association with the Five Dimensions Trust here in Milton Keynes. And that allowed us to bring, obviously, Billy Beddo in from Canterbury in a full-time role. I was kind of, at the time, I was almost kind of transitioning out of coaching. I kind of saw that I was going to go down a different route than purely coaching. So, and I thought it was important that my time was spent not just, you know, if I was to coach a team, that's going to take, you know, a lot of my time and effort. Whereas if I don't coach a team, it allows me to then kind of put that effort into bringing in more coaches, bringing in more resource, you know, putting on more sessions, things like that. And then I'm always obviously there to kind of plug the gaps if a coach is ill or and stuff like that, where I can step in and help. But I thought it was important to get involved more in kind of the organization side of things to help grow the club than the actual coaching side of things.
And then when you talk about, I guess, trying to create a pathway and develop talent, like how do you approach that? What are you looking to do? What are the most important factors in making that happen? Like, obviously, you know, like you said, you're kind of starting with a bit of a base, but you've got to really put together, okay, if we want to develop national team level talent and future pros, like we need to put these things in place. Kind of what were those things and how did you go about doing that?
Yeah, so I think the first thing is to create a big base of players. So obviously the bigger the base of players that you have, the more, you know, the more chance you're going to find some talented kids. And that also obviously increases the competition level between the kids. You know, there's always, you know, kids are always having to kind of look over their shoulder because there's always somebody that is coming for their spot. So that kind of competition that we have within the club is really good. I mean, some of the best games we have in the season is kind of the inter-club games where we play the first team against the second team, or we play the under-12s against the under-13s. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, it's really competitive games and kids are looking to kind of prove themselves and continue to move up the pathway. So I think creating a big base of players is the first thing that we did. And then there's kind of, Pete alluded a little bit to the schools program. But obviously when we had the four coaches join through the Kickstart program, the first thing we did was get into the schools, because that was going to be, you know, it's going to help us to build relationships in the city and was also, you know, a key for us in terms of developing the numbers of players within the club. So first thing I did, I picked up the phone and spoke to James down at Richmond Knights to kind of ask what they do. And the advice he gave me was, you know, speak to the school sports partnership, which was the first thing I did. And that's been great for us. So we work with the school sports partnership here in Milton Keynes. So we help with all their tournaments that they run, which is obviously great for us in terms of, you know, at the end, we'll provide referees. At the end, we'll give all the kids flyers. If there's any talented kids that we spot, we'll talent ID. So we have like a golden ticket program that we do through the schools. So if we see a kid that's, you know, particularly talented, we give them a golden ticket and their first month of training with the club is free. Just kind of get them in the door. And once they get in the door, they're kind of hooked. And then, you know, we can move them into the appropriate level. So I think, yeah, working with the school sports partnership was big for us. And it also opened a lot of doors to the primary schools as well. You know, we do, you know, we're fully booked with our coaches. You know, we're in primary schools every day, you know, before school, after school, during school. So that's been a great success. And we've got a pretty good reputation within the schools. I think we deliver a good product at that level. And so much so that the teachers are now, you know, really supportive. And if they have, like there's one school, they had a kid in year six who was 6'2". So the teacher said, I brought him to the tournament because I knew you'd be here. And that kid's obviously now in the club, now playing with our junior national league team, under 11 at 6'2". So there is that type of thing that going on. I think we've got a good reputation within the city, and the schools program's been big for that. And then when we talk about kind of transition the kids from the schools program into the club, we have sort of three levels. So Pete mentioned we have six community clubs at the moment. So five of those in Milton Keynes, and they're kind of spread out geographically, so north, south, east and west. And the idea behind that was, you know, it's easy for kids to get there. So, you know, whichever part of the city you're in, you can play basketball, you know, within 5-10 minutes of where you need to get to. And also, you know, if we only offered one under 12 session on a Wednesday night and the kid plays football, then, you know, you might pick football. So we try to spread out the sessions where, you know, there's, you know, the six different venues all offer under 12s on different days. So, you know, wherever you live, whatever days you're available, you can play basketball. So that's kind of like the entry level of community. And that's, you know, like Pete said, we don't turn anyone down. That's open to kids of all abilities. And there's obviously some really talented kids in those sessions and also some brand new beginners. But that's like the, I guess, the kind of gateway into the club. Then above the community, the next stage is development. So if there's kids that show talent, we put them into the development program, which we run at under 10s, 12s, 14s and 16s at the moment. And that's an extra session with our most senior coaches. So they get an extra session on top of their community session. And, you know, it's with our most senior coaches so they can kind of make sure they're getting what they need. And also the coaches can keep an eye on them and see if they're ready to transition into the National League program. And at that level, so at, you know, community and development level, the kids play in our CBL. So we've got the Breakers CBL, which we run most Saturdays. We run under 8 tournaments, and then we run leagues under 10s, 12s, 14s and 16s. So like Pete mentioned, the kids can, you know, they can play basketball pretty much every Saturday without having to leave Milton Keynes. They're getting competitive games. And that's been brilliant for us because, you know, there is not much local basketball in England. And that's why you see, you know, you see a lot of the cricket scores in the National League. You know, we saw a 160-0 score last weekend. And, you know, I don't know who's to blame. You know, everyone's blaming the team that won 160. But I think, you know, there's multiple people to blame there, in my opinion. So I think things like that can be stopped with good local basketball. So all our kids, you know, if they're not quite National League level, they can still play. Obviously, National League goes up 2 years. So it goes from 12s to 14s to 16s. You know, 12s to 14s is a big jump. So, you know, if you might be an under 13, just physically you might not be able to compete in the under 14s. So that's where they can play a year of CBL and then potentially go back into the National League the following year. And it just gives, we play some National League games and, you know, early in the season and the coach going, oh, this is the first game the kids have ever played. And I was like, what are you doing in the National League? You know, there should be something before that. So, you know, all our kids that play National League, they've had a year or two of playing in the CBL before they get to that level. And then we run, obviously, Junior National League. We run under 12s, 14s, 16s and 18s. We run two teams at every age group on the boys' side. We run one on the girls' side. We actually decided to go with two under 14 teams on the girls' side this year. But we decided not to go with the under 18 women. We just played in the cup with that team, managed to reach the semifinals. We only had kind of three true under 18s, so we decided to kind of just stick with the 16s. National League programs are doing particularly well across the board. I think our girls program in particular, I just think, you know, there's not many clubs that put much effort into girls basketball, which is a real shame, you know, because there is a lot of talent here. And, you know, we end up losing girls to netball because they have a better infrastructure than we do. So we've put a big effort into the girls program. So girls doing really well. I think under 12s, 14s and 16s are all undefeated and top of their league at the moment, which I think speaks to the good work that we're doing, but also the fact that there's, you know, the level of girls basketball really needs to improve in this country. I think, you know, clubs need to put more effort into developing the girls side of the game as well. With the boys teams, you know, we have kind of under 12s and 14s, we're doing particularly well. Under 16s and 18s, you know, we're doing okay. We're in Premier level with those teams. And I think the ambition is just to get, you know, to get at least all of our first teams to Premier level at National League, which we actually achieved this year. Just to continue to provide good competition outlet for the kids.
Obviously, the men's team now, like, you know, it's almost like you've got it, but you kind of don't need it, you know. But then what kind of, where does it sit and how important is it, do you think it is to the whole program?
Yeah, Josh, can I answer that one? It's a bottom-up philosophy. So it is about community basketball, but the kids have to have aspiration. And so we see it as three very distinct programs. We see our community program up to our CBL. Then we see our Junior National League program, which is the aspiration. And then, as I said right at the beginning, we want something for them to be able to play to. So there needed to be men's basketball. Division 3 was where we were looking. And I think it's fair to say that we will be looking for exactly the same route for the women as well. So, you know, watch this space. I would imagine we'll be announcing a women's team very shortly. But what's interesting, I had a conversation with some guys from Manchester yesterday. And we were talking about the fact that the men's program is the bit that draws the attention to the club. Nobody in Milton Keynes had ever heard of our club for the first 3 years. We've only been involved in the National League. This is our third year, I think, Josh. This is our third year, and we've got 12 teams. And we've got 12 teams in the National League. So we've got a can-do attitude. We've made it happen. But up until this year, we'd never needed to kind of go to the community and kind of, you know, ask for some support or something. And we could talk about that at some point. But the interesting thing for me this year is it's been the men's program that has attracted the interest from the Milton Keynes community. But once that interest has been attracted, because of the scope and the breadth and the depth of the program that we offer, various people are talking to me about wanting to be involved in at various levels. I've got a couple of companies that I'm talking with now that are only interested in the community side. They love to come and watch the men play. They were at the game with us at the weekend, and they love it. But actually, the thing that they really, really like is our community basketball program. They love our community basketball league. And it's really interesting what people are looking for. I think the world has changed from the days of just sponsoring somebody for a couple of £1,000 and putting a name on a shirt. Corporate social responsibility is the kind of the buzzwords, and everybody's kind of looking at that thing. And I think we've moved on to a point where we are becoming part of the infrastructure of Milton Keynes. We're actually becoming a little bit of an influencer in terms of affecting children in things like their social behaviour, being involved in schools, non-basketball activities, which I think is absolutely fantastic. And I'll be the first to admit that I didn't envisage that when I started, but it became very obvious about year five that we were starting to have an impact within the area. So the men's programme is very, very important, not just in its own right, what it does in terms of enhancing the whole club's reputation.
Yeah, and in terms of,
to add a thing there.
Yeah, sorry, Sam. Just in terms of like the actual where it fits on the pathway of the player pathway. Obviously, last year Division Three, we had I think 7 academy players that were part of the team. This year, with now Division Two, we've got 4. So and you know, one starts, you know, another one plays regular minutes. So I think, you know, there's a lot of pressure on us to win this year. We have to win every game basically to try and get promoted to Division One. So the margin for error is really small, and that's just the way it is. But I think, you know, hopefully we can get to Division One, we can become an established Division One team, you know, and it will be hopefully with a team that's primarily players from Milton Keynes and the surrounding areas and kids that have come up through our program. That's kind of the ambition for the next 5 years or so.
Yeah, I was going to say that you know, clearly to everyone that's been sort of following the story, you've got, you know, players that are very, very good for the level that we're playing at last year, Division 3 and Division 2, that I would feel pretty certain that they could get sort of professional contracts elsewhere at higher levels. But obviously they've chosen, I assume, to buy in. Can you talk about sort of that process, trying to bring players back home, kind of what was the vision that was sold to them, how bought in they are to what you're trying to do, and is it really about, you know, we're all coming together to really make Milton Keynes the basketball destination in England?
Yeah, I think that the key thing you said there, Sam, was that they're all kind of bought into what we're doing, and I think there is a, you know, there's a clear mission statement behind what we're doing, and I think the players, you know, Jordan Spencer, Blaine Freckleton, Mike New, Chris Tawire, the local guys, they see what's happening underneath. And obviously they came through, you know, a similar program when the MK Lions were in town. So I think, yeah, definitely they're kind of bought into the much bigger picture of the club. And I'll let Pete talk more about this, but I think what we've done and how we've been able to get those guys and retain those guys is Pete does a lot of work with them kind of away from the court, kind of helping them transition, because they're kind of not, I don't want to say, you know, back end of their careers, but they're not young anymore. So they do need to start thinking about life after basketball. So that's where I think that's kind of been a bit of a USP for us, where Pete's been brilliant in terms of helping the guys, you know, think about things outside of basketball, you know, become more, you know, self-sustainable, where you're not kind of reliant on a club giving you a contract for 8 months to go here, and then you come back in the summer and you've got nothing. I think, you know, I'll let Pete talk more on that, but I think that's been the real USP for us, as well as obviously them, you know, being local, being from the area and kind of buying into the vision of the club.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that we kind of, you know, Josh knows all these guys. I didn't know any of them. I know them by name. Josh knew all these lads, and we got conversations going, and they all have played at a professional level, you know, very, very high levels involved. But I think also, Josh mentioned it, I have a program that I called Life After Basketball, and it was really about trying to get over to these guys that, you know, in most cases, the basketball club wants you for what you're going to do for them. And therefore, the players become a little bit mercenary about it as well. And I've always found that very frustrating. with this whole kind of rosters just changing every year and players appearing in different colour shirts every year. And it was really something that I found not particularly great. So when we were able to convince them, Josh managed to get them through the door, sat them down with me. We managed to convince them that not only were they buying into something, and I think that's been proven that, you know, sell out games, that the crowds love them, the guys love playing in front of everybody. But it was about the fact that I saw things changing. This year alone, Blaine is now a dad. Billy Beddo is now a dad. Once you have kids involved in your life, things change. You don't want to be in a car 2-3 times a week, driving an hour and a half to practice and then getting home at midnight and getting back up for work again. You know, your responsibilities change. And so I think there were things like that. People like Jordan, I don't think Jordan might be talking about it. I mean, Jordan and Chris have only ever known basketball. You know, Chris has got two young kids, and because his career was taking him into Europe, he wasn't seeing his family for a period of time. And so I think there's a whole bunch of things. Andre Arisol is another one. I think Andre is actually a really interesting example. Obviously, Andre had a very bit of a freak accident earlier in the season, which was season finishing. I would argue that if he'd have been at another club, he'd have had his contract cancelled, more than likely, and then had to go back home to Northampton, sit at home, recuperate on his own. When he came to us, one of the reasons he chose us over a couple of other very good offers he had was that, and it's nothing to do with money, I assure you, it was about the fact that I was encouraging him to actually set his own business up and to actually have a living and an income outside of basketball. So I think Andre is a huge success story. He now runs his own business up in the Northampton area, providing basketball coaching, athletic coaching, mentoring, all sorts of things. So that when he did get injured, even though he couldn't play basketball, he's been able to carry on getting an income. And not only that, but he's actually now starting to build a business. And this is the thing I try to encourage with the guys. Mike New Jr. has got an ACL now. So we've got a major problem with him, another season ending injury. But Mike now has, Mike's retrained as a sports physio. And Mike now works with our actual team physio and works in there. And that gives him the potential if he wants to start his own business at some point. And I try and help them with that. Chris has started his own basketball club up in the Peterborough area. And I've been working with him on that. And also he does a lot of public speaking. Blaine is our entrepreneur, and he has visions of wanting to run his own business. So Blaine and I sit down and talk about, you know, what makes a business and what's going to make it successful. So I think we do put a lot of time and effort into the guys off the floor. And I do think that's one of the things it's a package. It is a package. And I do think it is actually quite unique.
And are they contracted as full-time professional basketball players, or are they coaching as well? Like, kind of, what is the actual payment structure for them? And I'm assuming that they're obviously, their salaries are funded by the community programs that are obviously bringing in a lot of money.
Josh, do you want to talk about that?
No, you got it, Pete.
Okay. So let's get a couple of things straight. First of all, I am not a multimillionaire. Secondly, we do not have a huge, huge budget. Our program, and I obviously provided you with some figures, Sam, in terms, it is a big turnover club now. Our men's program, and I'm sure we'll end up talking about this with arena and facilities and various things later in the program, but the cost of running our men's program this year is going to be about £80,000. It could be less than that. Four of our guys coach within the club program. We do not have one contracted salaried player. Full stop. So we work with the guys. We give them, I'm trying to find the more and more what I call non-basketball income opportunities. To try and lessen the reliance on just basketball, because I think that's a win-win situation for the player, because, you know, there'll come a time when they're too old, nobody loves them anymore, they get an injury, they're finished. They've then got to carry on with their lives. So I think that's one thing. And also I think is, you know, just financially prudent that we need to, as a club, we're a community basketball club. We generate the majority of our money through our community funding. It's very low cost. We charge the kids £5 an hour. That's basically what it works out at. The business is it's a marginal costing business. I need 900 kids to break even. That's so I always understood that the business model and what was going to happen with it. But with the guys, there is no way that we could have a number of full-time players and take on the sort of budgets that some of these teams do. So we try and make the environment the best we can. We have a team physio, you know, they get into the physio whenever they need to get into the physio. We take care of all that for them. We made a decision, or I made a decision, which was that it's unfair to send a 6'6" guy or a 6'9" guy on a minibus to Newcastle. So I made the decision that we were going to put them all on coaches this year. That costs £12,000. Simple as that. So yeah, we can have a minibus. I could reduce it to £70,000. We bring in about £30,000 a year from ticket sales and ticket sales and merchandising. The four coaches, the four guys that are involved on our coaching program, probably there's about £30,000 worth of coaching in there somewhere along the line. So the actual subsidy that the club makes to the men's program is about £20,000. I think that's incredibly good value for money. And one that we actually feel next year will not be a subsidy at all. I believe I've got sponsors next year to cover that shortfall and any just general increase. And for me, that's a great thing because that means that, let's call it that £20,000. That's another £20,000 I can invest in another community coach, which means I can carry on growing the program even more, take us up to 1,200 kids, 1,300 kids. So it's all part of the jigsaw. It's all part of the jigsaw.
Obviously, you know, you mentioned numbers there, and I do want to speak about numbers because that is what people want to hear. You know, you're on track to turn over £500,000 this year, which is, you know, I think people would be amazed to hear that number. What is the sort of the breakdown of where that money is coming from, the split in whether it's ticket sales, whether it's community clubs, whether it's grants, whether it's commercial sponsorship? Like, how is the sort of the pie broken up?
Sure. So, because it was a marginal costing business, if this was about money, if this was about a basketball club about making money, I wouldn't have Junior National League. I wouldn't have Men's National League or Women's National League. I would just have a community basketball club. And I think one of the tricks that Basketball England is missing is that there is income to be generated through community basketball. And I just think they're missing a complete trick. And because it's very difficult financially for any club just to run National League clubs. I have conversations every week with owners and chairmen and people that run basketball clubs, and they're all struggling to make ends meet. And part of the problem is they don't have the foundation. You don't build a house without putting the foundations down first. And you don't build a big house without putting big foundations. So we have almost 1,100 kids now. And so that in itself will generate about £350,000 this year in terms of memberships. But what it also does is it creates our own audience. We created our own audience. So let me give you an example, which is we price our season over 40 training weeks. So take the holidays, for example. I've got 6 basketball venues where we won't be training because, well, everybody's away. So I work on the basis that 50% of all the kids out of 6 venues are all away on holiday, but 50% of the venues are still around. And so they're looking for something to do. So we run basketball camps. Yeah, we run basketball camps. And as long as they are generating an income and a contribution towards the cost of the coaches, that's got to be good business. We've got ourselves to a point now where we run basketball camps every single day of the summer. and they are well populated. The other side of that is the schools, and the schools is more where I think Josh can probably fill in, but that's a big, you know, that's worked out to be another big contribution, because community on its own without the extra side of the schools thing is not enough. Josh?
Yeah, I think obviously, yeah, like you mentioned, we have six full-time coaches at the moment. So it's easy to keep them busy evenings and weekends with club sessions, games, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, what are they doing sort of 9 to 5, Monday to Friday? So, you know, getting into the schools is huge in terms of generating income and for them during those hours. I think like I mentioned before, we have a good reputation in the schools program. The kind of issue we have with the schools program is, like I said, everyone wants 3:15 to 4:15. Everyone wants an after school club. So it's trying to, you know, they need to work more than 1 hour between 9 and 5. So it's kind of working out what else we can do. So we offer lunchtime clubs. We've offered some in-school we offer some in-school coaching. That can be more challenging in terms of, you know, they don't want to pay double. They're already paying a teacher. They don't want to pay a coach to come in as well. So that can be a little bit more challenging. We do give the coaches some admin roles as well. So we brought in a female coach this year, Paige, and she's basically taken over the admin of the schools program, which has been a huge load off my shoulders, which has been brilliant. And then I think what we need to do next is kind of, we're going to try and diversify our schools program a little bit in terms of what we offer. So we're looking to bring in like a Hoops for Health or something similar for next season to, you know, if we are in Division One, to potentially use some of the players to go and deliver that program. And like Pete said, kind of basketball, but also some non-basketball community projects that are kind of delivering a, you know, a good message to the community about, you know, healthy eating, you know, anti-crime, all that type of thing. So I think we'll looking to add those type of programs in and, you know, to fill up that time sort of 9 to 5, Monday to Friday. But yeah, definitely the schools program's been, it's what's allowed us to kind of employ the coaches on a full-time basis.
And are you tapping into any grant funding at all at the moment?
So, and this is where it's a really interesting conversation. So of that, about £490,000 our turnover was last financial year. I would suggest that our grants and sponsorship element of that was about £30,000. And that's it. The rest of it is generated from basketball, from schools, from our CBL, which is additional. We have what we call a pick and mix program. So we have like private coaching sessions, small group coaching sessions. So there's a lot of ways of doing it. Obviously, we sell tickets for the men's games. We run birthday parties. We have a waiting list of birthday parties for our men's games now. We obviously sell merchandise, but grants and grants and sponsorship is the area that I've been spending this year tackling. And the reason for that is of the concern for me of that £500,000 is the increasing fixed element of it, which is the court costs and staff. Our court costs this year will be about £150,000. Next year, it's liable to be about £180,000-£190,000, even if we stand still. So other than charging the kids more money, which I don't want to do, I've got to try and find a way of getting more grants or finding a way of getting more sponsors. So a couple of things just to explain, because I think it is of interest to other clubs. We're set up as a non-profit company at the moment. And what that really means is that for every 10 grant opportunities we go for, probably we don't even get to go for 7 of them because we're not a charity. And then you're probably applying for 10 grants to get one. So one of the things that we're doing is we're moving this right now to become what's called a CIO, Charitable Incorporated Organization. It's a charity. And that's partly the reason is because we're doing more and more kind of basketball, non-basketball, charitable work, getting involved in the schools. What that will do is that means that we'll be able to go after every grant opportunity. And so that immediately gives us like a, you know, 10 out of 10 opportunity to go after. And I think it will, as we do more non-basketball work, we'll tick a lot more boxes for criteria. And we have a guy that's just joined us, funny enough, from the, he worked with the Lawrence Delalio Rugby Foundation. and he's come and joined us on a, and he's already having an effect in identifying various bits and pieces. So that's the grant side of things. On the sponsorship side of things, Josh knows I'm not. You need grants and you need sponsors. But my challenge with sponsors is that if you get yourself a £50,000 sponsor or a £100,000 sponsor, you will spend the money. And then the following year, when they can't afford it, all of a sudden you've got to cut your program again. And I think we've seen in basketball over the years, you know, sponsors come and go, TV come and go, and we've seen the rise and fall of basketball from the heady days of the 80s, you know, to where we are again now. So I'm very controlled about our sponsorship. So I've set some limits. So I think next year we're liable to maybe go towards maybe 600,000 turnover. I would like to see no more than about 15% of our turnover with sponsorship and maybe 15% max on grants. And I think if I could do that, that makes it manageable and takes away the risk factor for me. So we've got Phil, our guy on board, who's making inroads into the grant side. And I've taken it upon myself this year to get out and there into the Milton Keynes community. So I do a lot of work with, we have an independent radio station here in Milton Keynes called MKFM. And I advertise on there, two adverts every single day. One advertising the men's program, one advertising our community program. And that is having a great effect. 100,000 readership, listenership. We have our own dedicated website on a dedicated page on the website. That gets us 350,000 hits a month onto the website. And as a result of that, I've now, I think, potentially got three really, really good community-involved partners for next year who have all verbally committed to the club. And that will set me well on the way to the pathway of achieving that percentage that I'm looking for.
Interesting. I mean, purely for selfish reasons, because at the moment I'm exploring whether or not to switch our foundation from a CIC to a charity, in large part because we had a conversation last week with a very wealthy individual that said, if you're a charity, you know, our donations can be tax deductible. So it makes it a lot more attractive to them. Why a CIO and not all the way into fully being a charity?
So when we first started the club, I sat down with my accountant and we talked about what the right way to go things was. And so we went for a not-for-profit and I stayed away from being a charity because there is a lot there's a lot involved in being a charity. There's a lot more responsibility and a lot more boxes to tick. The CIO, the CIO is a fairly new entity. It's not been around that many years at all, and there are some challenges with being a fully blown charity. One of which I think is the challenge of finding trustees, because actually they do have liability. It's a bit like being a sole trader, whereas with a CIO now, it's a new entity. The trustees don't have any liability. And so that's kind of one of the reasons we went down that road. It's a much simpler version of a charity. It also allows us, basically it means that we our responsibilities and our reporting is to the Charities Commission rather than to HMRC.
Right.
So it's pretty simple. And you are right about things like gift aid and donations being tax deductible. But I think from our point of view, Sam, it's more about how many doors it opens. For example, we were saying about non-basketball work. I've got conversations going on at the moment with a high street bank to go into schools and deliver a program to do with kids learning to understand finance, organise bank accounts and things like that. I think our guys are perfectly set to deliver that. Josh mentioned Hoops for Health. We have a program. Andre is running a program up in Northampton delivering anti-knife crime messages, which is absolutely, absolutely fantastic. We've always run what I call a sports recycling program here in Milton Keynes, whereby we try and encourage the kids to, when the kids grow out of their sports gear, to recycle it back into the community. We used to send it off to South Africa and Samoa and places like that. But actually, going forward, we're going to recycle it and actually recycle it back into the Milton Keynes area, because through cost of living and everything else that's going on, there is a need within our own community.
One of the things I wanted to touch upon, and I'm just aware of time, is just like building fandom. You know, one of the things that we, I think in England generally struggle with, and the British Basketball League certainly struggles with, is from a franchise perspective, is actually building a fan base that is invested in the success or failure of the team, caring for them to win, caring about the players. And obviously, you know, I've spoken about it a couple of times publicly, is just that, you know, having 500 traveling fans to National Cup final and seeing them with banners and, you know, wanting to get autographs of all the players afterwards, it's a rare sight in British basketball. And how do you think you've been able to develop that fandom amongst the Milton Keynes population?
Okay. Well, I think, Josh, that's your question, I think.
Yeah, I think it's a couple of things. I think, obviously, having a lot of local players helps. You know, a lot of those are, you know, friends, family, like, and one thing, you know, your question earlier about, you know, it's another hook for the guys to play at home is they get to play in front of their friends and family every week. So a lot of it was friends and family. We have, obviously, the London Lions used to be the MK Lions. They're in town, so there was... We've got kind of a core of old MK Lions fans that are now Breakers fans, that, you know, really happy that there's basketball back in Milton Keynes. So there's, you know, there's definitely an appetite for it. But I think the big thing is obviously it's our community program. You know, with 1,100 kids, that's 2,200 parents, brothers, sisters. So already, you know, with one email, we can market to all those people that there's a game coming up. And I think, you know, especially since the success of winning the National Cup back in January, we've had a sellout, or pretty much a sellout, all of our home games. We've taken fans to every away game, every single away game this year. We've had fans, you know, we offer the fans to kind of travel on the bus. And I think the fact that, you know, we make no secret when we bring the guys in, we tell them, look, we want you to finish your careers here with the club. So the fact that it's the, you know, the same players coming back each year, I think also helps with that. So the players not only get the fans not only have like an affinity with the player, with the team, but also with certain players that they like to come and watch. You know, they all have their own favorite player and they talk with the players after the game. Obviously the kids all come on the court after the game. They can get autographs, they can get photos. So I think that all helps, you know, in terms of building the fandom. But I think building the community program is, you know, a lot of the fans and a lot of the people that are at the games are the kids from our junior program. And like Pete touched on earlier, you know, a big driver of having a men's team was so that the kids have something to aspire to. Hopefully next season we will be launching a women's team as well. So that'll be, you know, something for the young girls to aspire to as well.
How important do you think it is to have a good digital presence? You know, like I go on your website, it's very clear. There's a clear outline of everything that you do, how to get involved, how to follow the men's team, news reports. Then obviously you've got a good social media presence. Like, how important do you think the digital and social side is for basketball clubs?
Yeah, I think it's huge. You know, I think it was start of last season. We worked with a local company, Visual Identity, here in Milton Keynes to, you know, to revamp our website. You know, it was kind of much needed, and we put a lot of time, effort, money into building a proper website, which, you know, it's not perfect, but, you know, it's good. And I think probably this summer we'll have another little revamp of it. Social media, I think our social media is decent, you know, not the best by any stretch, but I think it's good. I think we've got a guy, Josh Nesden, who's a really good photographer and videographer who captures a lot of things. And I think, you know, that's 95% of the battle, having kind of good content to put on there. But I think the big thing with our digital presence is we try to be consistent. So, you know, you're not having to, you know, wait 2 days for the result of the game to go on, for example, which I see with a lot of clubs. I think we try to be as consistent as possible. So we have kind of a posting schedule that we put out. We put out the kind of the weekend fixtures at a certain time. We put out, you know, the results at a certain time. And regularly we try to post kind of, you know, at least one post a day if we can. So I think the consistency of our social media is what makes it effective. And yeah, I agree. It's kind of, for many people, it's like their window into the club, you know? So I think it's really important that clubs should invest, you know, time and effort into having a good digital presence.
Well, when you look to the future, you know, how much room for growth do you think there is? How big do you think the club could be? And I guess, what are the things on the sort of near and longer term roadmap of where you're trying to get to? I guess that could go to both of you.
Okay, well, let me start. I think we, you know, we're never going to go away from being what we are, a community club, bottom up. So for us, we are surrounded by, obviously, there's a strong basketball program in Northampton. There's a very good basketball program in Bedford. So our limits are about half an hour. But I still think there are probably four or five venues around that we could actually go to outlying kind of areas of Milton Keynes where there are quite small towns, that type of thing. So I think there's four or five there. The consequence of that would be not only more members, but it would be more people for our Central Basketball League, for our CBL. I'd like the CBL to develop. Josh and I have talked recently. I'm not sure how feasible it is, but because of the lack of local basketball, we've even talked about trying to create a development league for, you know, people in Northampton, Bedford, Aylesbury and Luton, so that to try and, you know, get kids playing more basketball. And that's part of what we do. So for me, that would be one. I think on the junior national league teams, we're pretty well populated other than under 18 girls right now. And that's only a matter of time. I think, you know, both Josh and I talked about senior women. That will happen. And then, you know, and I think it's more than likely that we will probably consider another men's team so that we will always have an exit route for the kids coming out of the academy. You know, because not every kid coming out of the academy is going to be able to play at Division Two or Division One, but it is important that for the kids that don't go to university, that we kind of keep them involved with the club. That's how I feel about it.
Josh, you got anything to add?
Yeah, I think, you know, Pete's kind of outlined it from a structure point of view. I think from like a on-court performance, that type of thing, I'd like to see, you know, both men's and women's teams in Division One. And kind of having that complete pathway for boys and girls from 4 years old all the way up to seniors. Like Pete mentioned, with a second men's team to kind of be a transition for some kids and some players that, you know, won't be capable of playing on the men's team, because ultimately it's going to be, you know, competitive to get on that Division One team, we hope. And just seeing those teams full of kids that have come through our program, you know, primarily players that have been through our pathway that are then kind of representing the club at senior level. I think, I don't know if we're going to talk about this, but I think the big thing that is kind of the hold of or the drawback of every club in the UK or most clubs is not having a facility. So I think us kind of having our own facility is going to be, you know, having a home is going to be the key to kind of, you know, how far we can go. I think without our own facility, we are kind of capped at a certain level. But I think, yeah, hopefully, you know, Pete will probably talk more about that. But yeah, I think getting our own facility would be huge.
How are those conversations going? How do you see that happening? How much is that going to cost? What is it going to look like? Kind of where are you at with it in the journey?
That's Josh just trying to push me into a corner. So that's just, I said that when my wife and I started the club, we always knew that facilities were going to be a problem. You know, Vince found that when he was here with the Lions and as a consequence left. Milton Keynes is a fantastic city, but it does not have one spectator facility. That's shameful on behalf of the council, I have to say. But I promised my wife that I would not get involved in a project to look at our own facility in Milton Keynes until about 3 months ago. And then I kind of, when I'm looking at the finances and trying to make sure that we are financially prudent, I need to find a way of generating more tickets and allowing more people to watch our games. I think we're quite capable of bringing in 1,000 people to watch our games. MK Lightning, the hockey team here, bring in 2,000 plus for all their home games. I'm sure we can bring in 1,000, maybe more. So I have started the initial conversations with local council, cabinet ministers, got the MPs involved. The three local businesses are all very, very keen to help. We just had a very large company approach us yesterday, a construction company, asking to get involved in it. So the conversation's going on, but I think what we're talking about is probably a three-court venue. I think it has to be a three-court venue because otherwise you can't get the spectators in. And so you've got an initial build, I have no idea, probably £7 or 8 million, I would think. But actually, that's not the bit that worries me. The bit that worries me is making it financially viable. And how do we do that? And I think it has to be more than just a basketball. It can't be a basketball arena. So it may have to be multi-sport. It will definitely have to have things like commercial gyms. It will have to have cafes. It will have to have bars. It will have to have anchor tenants. So very, very early days for us. You know, I have to say that both Leicester Riders and Newcastle Eagles, Paul and Russell, have been really, really helpful in kind of helping us kind of understand what's involved in getting arenas together. And they've always had an open door policy for us to go and chat with them. So I think it's kind of like watch this space, but it's we've got our hands full just kind of keeping the growth going.
Are there aspirations to have a British Basketball League franchise and a Women's British Basketball League franchise? Or do you think that staying in the National League and focusing on the community basketball stuff is kind of where you're going to stay? Or do you think in the long term that could be an option?
So for me, I think the Basketball England, Division One and Division One with the women. I personally am very happy with that level. I think BBL, we've all seen what's happening with BBL at the moment with 777 and our friends in Scotland. It's a very kind of volatile environment right now. The numbers they're talking about at that level are huge and the requirements are huge. As Josh and I said, you know, maybe when Jeremy gets his big contract, he might decide to come back and invest in Milton Keynes. Who knows? But on a serious note, I think we want to be. I would not want to do anything that would jeopardise the financial solvency of the club and the longevity of the club. I think that's far, far more important. Having said that, I'm sure if you talk to the guys in the BBL office, I'm sure there's a pin in Milton Keynes.
Yeah.
What else can I say?
No, that makes sense. Josh, you got anything to add on that?
Yeah, no, I think like P said, it's just the financial risk at that level is so much more. And I think we wouldn't be able to do it without external investment. And also like I alluded to before, like the idea of the senior teams is so that kids that come through the pathway can play. And I think, you know, at that level, you know, you're reliant on bringing players in and out. And the turnover of players is something that is so high. You know, players come and like people mentioned, they're very mercenary about it. They come, some get involved in the community and it's great. Some don't. They come just to do their job and leave. So yeah, it's not on the agenda right now, I would say. I think we'd both be very happy with Division One for men and women.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say, Sam, that for example, if you look at the Academy program at 5D, the very cool thing about the Academy program is that pretty much every single kid is in that academy comes from Milton Keynes. And I think, again, that's probably unique amongst most of the academies. And it's a kind of another problem I have with the structure, the inherent structure. I don't think clubs are doing enough to recruit, to develop their own players. And one of the things we've done in Milton Keynes, and it's something I alluded to right at the beginning, is I'm quite happy to take responsibility for the development of this club, along with Josh. And so we're doing it all ourselves. We don't need outside help. And the problem is, once you get outside help, I've said this to Josh before, you be careful what you wish for, because people come in and start, you know, once they've got a major shareholding, for example, you know, they can start running the place they want to run it. And I like the fact that we're in control. I like the fact that my general manager is actually a Milton Keynes kid. I like the fact that our team that won the national championship this year, the national cup this year, 8 guys from Milton Keynes, 4 guys from the academy. Our girls program, all Milton Keynes girls. Our boys program, all Milton Keynes guys. And that's the way I want it. That's the way I want to keep it.
Perfect. I think that's a perfect place to leave it. We're bang on an hour here. So, yeah, thank you so much for your time. Wish you all the best for the remainder of the season. And hopefully this will shed a little light to help other clubs level up and increase the capacity of what they're doing, so we have more clubs like Milton Keynes across the country.
Okay. Cool. Thanks, Sam.
You are listening to the Hoops Fix podcast, the official voice of the UK's largest basketball website. Visit hoopsfix.com for exclusive news, videos, and more.